If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Eric, has that ever happened to you? You've got your purse hanging there at a bar and somebody tries to steal it?
It never has. The thing that strikes me about this story is who carries $3,000 in cash around?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I could probably think of a time I had $1,000 in my pocket because somebody needed it for a specific thing. Maybe a contractor wanted to be paid in cash. But in this day and age, with plastic and electronic transfer with your phone, I mean, you get points if you use your credit card. You know, but I don't think that there's any reason to draw suspicion about it. She's a victim of a crime here. So however irregular that is, she's not the problem, right? That's weird. You're more vulnerable, but it's not her fault that her purse got stolen, right?
No, but I don't think it's all that unusual if someone gets their purse stolen, unfortunately. So the $3,000 kind of strikes me as an interesting wrinkle on that story, like who carries that much around? But the other thing that I'm thinking about is, you know, you're saying how much of their lives women carry around in their purses. And my thought on that is that how much of our lives we almost all of us carry around in our phones.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, you know, I would gladly lose a wallet stuffed with cash and credit cards and so on, as opposed to losing my phone. I think about that a lot, the vulnerability that we have with our phones, and it's a huge security problem. And whatever you read about stick-ups, street robberies and so on, the phone is almost always taken, and usually the perpetrators get the passcode from the victim, and it's a tough problem that needs to be dealt with, I think, in some technological way, some solution to being able to cut off access to those things.
Yeah, there was a story the other day about that where the person had their phone stolen and the bad guys, I guess they got a gun pointed at them, and they say, give me the code. And, you know, that's like, give me the key to your vault or I'm going to shoot you. And so what are you going to do? You give him a bad number, he'll know.
Oh.
You know, they're right there.
Yeah, you have to give them the right number, obviously. And sometimes they will make you transfer money directly from PayPal or Zelle or, one of those Venmo,
yeah,
right into their accounts. And what can you do? You've got to do that. You're at the point of a gun to do that. So
it's also really strange, Eric, isn't this story that the Secret Service was right there? This guy walks in, sits down next to her. He's got an N95 mask on, which is a little unusual these days, but some people still do that. But he's sitting right next to a cabinet secretary at a restaurant. That should be like 9 red flags for the two people that are there to guard her. And then he slides his foot over and squishes her purse into his jacket. I mean, how did that? That's amazing to me that people are that he was able to pull that off.
Yeah, huge security failure.
Speaking of a lot of money, there's an awkward segue. Did you see the Wall Street Journal story? It's said by John McCormick. You think that's our John McCormick here in Chicago that used to write for the Trib?
It is, but it's not John McCormick, the former editorial page editor.
Oh. There were
two John McCormicks on staff. One was one of our ace reporters, a younger guy, and then there was John McCormick, who was on the editorial board. This is John McCormick, the younger.
Okay.
And he talks about, you know, this long story in the Wall Street Journal talks about how J.B. Pritzker, with his estimated net worth of $3.7 billion, is clearly contemplating a run for president. John McCormick did not get an interview with Pritzker about this, and he's been kind of coy about whether he's running for president, and he's also been reluctant to talk about whether he's going to run for re-election in 2026. There are those questions that are coming up, and he's going to have to make a decision on running for re-election pretty soon. The advice that he's been getting is not to run for re-election, that it's going to be easier for him to run for president when if he's going to run for president, it's going to be easier for him to run for president when he's not in office. There are demands of the office, and there's also a lot of things that can suddenly go wrong, suddenly happen in a state, and you're going to have to deal with, and it could be a huge distraction. My feeling is if he's going to run for president, and I'm not so sure that he should, I'm not sure that he's the most attractive Democratic candidate out there by any means, but if he does run for president, that he probably should remain governor. That if you're going to just be a billionaire running for president, you got to think about like Michael Bloomberg, right? The former mayor of New York who ran for president and spent, I don't know, what he spent $1 billion on his campaign and got zero votes in the, zero delegates in the primary. I don't think that running as just a billionaire is going to work. So I think that he should stay in office, try to run for re-election, which I think he would probably win pretty handily.
I wonder if we in Illinois are the best judges of his viability as a candidate. We know him and what we like about him and what we don't like about him, what seems to be going well, what's not. But the bigger question is, do people in Kentucky and California and New Jersey know who he is and what do they think about him? I think the country is familiar with the governors of Michigan, Pennsylvania, maybe Kentucky, certainly California. Those people have higher profiles. J.B. Pritzker, I don't know if they know him out there and if they like him or if they would like him. But I will mention this to you, Eric. Heather Cox Richardson, the historian, the Substack newsletter writer, the author, she's coming to town this weekend for the Humanities Fest, and she'll be talking about democracy in America, about which she's relatively optimistic, by the way. And she said that rather than trying to find a centrist, somebody that will say, okay, let's patch this country together, it's better to have somebody who runs on some, not extreme, but if you are a progressive governor and those are your principles, stand up for them and defend them. She said that people respect that more, even if they don't agree with everything that you're saying. They would rather have somebody believe in something and fight for it rather than try and make everybody happy. That's the mistake I think I make sometimes personally. But she said, even if you didn't agree with him, and I thought, think about Donald Trump. Trump doesn't care what people think. He's nobody's uniter. He's a divider. In fact, he every day tries to separate us one more from the other. And that does seem to work with 49.5% of the population. Anyway, that's an interesting, I thought, assessment from her. She's noticing JB and thinks he's one to watch.
Well, I like JB Pritzker personally, and I like him politically. I don't think that he is the one right for the moment, and I don't necessarily agree with Heather Cox Richardson on this. I think that the Democratic Party does need to tack more to the center. I know that Bernie Sanders and AOC are getting big crowds, but so did Kamala Harris when she was running for president. That the country is much of the country is sort of in the middle, and they were swayed by these appeals that Donald Trump made about immigration and the economy. I mean, those were his two things, and also bashing on Democrats for being too aggressive in their claim on trans rights. I mean, those were really the three issues in that last campaign. And I think that inflation is going to get away from Trump, and I'm not sure how popular his new approach on immigration is going to be when you're looking at people who are being just sort of rounded up and not giving any kind of due process. So I think that when you're going to run a candidate for president, you're going to look for somebody who is more in the moderate vein, who's going to bring those working class voters over, who the Democrats have lost, going to bring those minority voters back over to the party whom the Democrats have lost. By speaking to those issues. And so if Heather Cox Richardson thinks that an extremely progressive candidate is the ticket for the Democratic Party, I just have to disagree with that.
And I hope I didn't overstate the case. Maybe when we record the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow, I'll play exactly what she said. She isn't anointing him by any stretch, but she doesn't think that he's off base. And when I made the case that I just made to you, she said, I completely disagree. So maybe I'll call you next time she's on our show and you can give her the other side.
Michelle, let's just join our podcast panel tomorrow if she's not busy.
Yeah, she is usually.
I'm sure she is.
I mean, she's multi-platform, multimedia, and she'll be in town on Sunday. Real quick note here, we'll take a break, come back with Eric Zorn. There was a couple of other topics we want to hit on about Kristi Noem. John, I use cash to avoid paying the 3% credit card charge. Restaurants, though, don't give you a discount. Retail stores don't give you a discount if you're using cash, do they? I know in some instances it works. John, I believe there are two job openings with the Secret Service now. John, you keep your purse in your lap. In most places, I'm 57. 219, why is she walking around with her passport? Is she being afraid of being mistaken as an illegal? John R.E. Careless Christie, who cares about the Secret Service? For goodness sake, she's in charge of the border, and she can't keep track of her purse. A lot of you are putting it that way. It's 11:46. Eric Zorn's Picayune Sentinel is a weekly newsletter here in Chicago, and he talks about Chicago stories and other ones as well. He's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll pick it up with Eric after this. Here at Purse Watch, Eric, just a couple of other stories, if I may, or text messages from our listeners. We're talking to Eric Zorn, the publisher of the newsletter, the Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com, and he'll sign you up for free. John, I'm not a big fan of Christy Noem, but my 80-year-old mother carries $5,000 in her purse, quote, in case of an emergency, and I hate it. Hey, King John, I know someone who carries $20,000 in cash in her purse. She works for a billionaire who likes to hand out $100 bills wherever he goes. I'll bet someone working for Taylor Swift must be doing the same. She gives out cash everywhere. Hey, John, why would you put a purse with $3,000 on the floor? Why not ask security to hold it? Boy, that's a good question. Listening to your show online, focusing on how much Christy Noem how much money Christy is familiar with the governor of Michigan had in her purse. But if you think about it, anyone of her caliber would have a very expensive bag. Most people that carry a bag with $2,500 leave it right on the table where they can see it. Yeah, I don't. It's a mystery, Eric. But you wonder, too, they do have video of the guy. If ever the Secret Service was interested in getting a petty thief, this would be the case. I wonder if they're going to find this fellow.
It's not really almost a petty theft anymore, right? It's a felony if you're stealing that much money. This guy, if they catch this guy, he's going away.
Yeah, right.
I'm interested in that woman who the listener whose mother carries around $5,000 in case of emergencies. Like, what sort of emergency would $5,000 in cash help you solve? Like a new hot water heater or something? I don't. That doesn't make any sense to me. I've never. Never been in a situation where I can't even imagine a situation.
I think it's generational. I just had a conversation with a colleague the other day, and this is just out of the blue. This is before Christy Noem. So we were catching up. We're talking about our parents and issues. And she was reminding me that her mom just put a whole lot more money into her checking account. And it was, mind you, it was just checking. So it's not like she was carrying cash. But she said, what are you doing? You don't leave it where we have it. You don't need to have an extra $5,000 in your checking account. And her mom said, just in case of an emergency, I need to have that money. And, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. But I think it must be a generational thing, Eric.
Yeah, I think it comes from the time when you didn't have quick access to banks, when you didn't have electronic banking, so that if you did, just for instance, need a new hot water heater, you'd have to figure out a way, and you didn't have a credit card, and you had to pay the guy or the woman who puts in the new hot water heater, and so you want to have that, be able to write a check. But that is totally generational, because you can, right now, you can take the money, move it from savings into checking online, and then you can pay somebody through an app from your accounts without any trouble. So it's a totally a generational thing. And like I say, my dad is going to be 94 in a couple of months. He uses Zelle all the time.
Really?
Money.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
Totally comfortable with it. So,
because I, when you said without any trouble, I thought, nope, there's the catchphrase, with a lot of trouble. My parents, I keep telling them, use DoorDash. If you don't like the food where you're staying, just have somebody deliver a pizza once in a while. And two things. One is they don't know what a DoorDash is or how to use it, and it would be difficult to train them. But secondly, they wouldn't spend the extra money because they're already paying for the food at the place where they're staying. In the Picayune Sentinel, Eric, you quoted a phrase, an all-American phrase, in your front story. What were you talking about there?
Well, the item is entitled, I'm talking about the...
What part of
what part of "And Justice for All" does the Trump administration not understand is my question. And, you know, we talk about, you know, in the Pledge of Allegiance, liberty and justice for all. And this is something that they want school children to say all over the country. And what has happened with Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the man from Maryland, the undocumented immigrant who was sent to a prison in El Salvador, is that he did not get due process of law. And due process of law is just sort of fundamental to justice, which is why the people are in such a lather about his case. And I think that it's very appropriate. It's very ominous that the Trump administration has decided that it can take for itself the power to send somebody to a foreign prison without putting him in front of a judge. And in this case, judges have ruled that he has the right to stay in the country while his asylum claims are being adjudicated. And what I'm saying, I mean, I start off by talking about how ominous and outraged I am about this. But I also, you know, want to point out that those of us on the left who are calling for, you know, justice and fairness and due process are quick to jump on defendants in other cases that maybe politically are satisfying to us and declare people guilty and say, you know, lock them up, throw away the key before they've had a fair trial. And I just wanted to remind my friends on the left that when you talk about the value of the rule of law and due process, which we should be underscoring, which is in danger right now, we've got to remember that our own instincts sometimes betray us. That when we see somebody, like a police officer shoot somebody, for instance, the immediate action is, you know, this was unjust, this person must go to prison, we must prosecute them, and so on. I think it's perfectly fair to say, this person, we should put this person on trial. This is an important incident to deal with. In the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, for instance, up in Kenosha, or the case of George Zimmerman down in Sanford, Florida, you have the cases where people on the left were just willing to suspend their view of justice and say, hey, you know, this guy's guilty, let's lock him up. And we just can't do that. You have to remember that if you believe in the rule of law and you believe in due process, it applies to everyone, even people who do things that disgust you and that you hate.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. And Kyle Rittenhouse is a free man today, having gotten the full advantage of all due process. So that can happen. The conversation I hear about this story with Garcia is that, in fact, were he to be sent back to the United States and given due process, he may well be found guilty of crimes or being in a terrorist or a gang, a terrorist organization or a gang, and might be deported, quite possibly not to El Salvador. It's the absence of process that is so alarming here, but the optics are so bad because process is a concept and a tattooed gang member is a thing that's more easy to get your head around. You and I will talk more about this on our next conversation, Eric. We'll do that on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow, all right?
I'll look forward to it, John. Thank you.
You can get the Picayune Sentinel by emailing ericzorn@gmail.com.